Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we need to continue our appeal to heaven. This is why we are going to continue providing you the content so that we can go through these documents with you. You can listen, you can read along. As a matter of fact, I'd highly recommend everybody take the opportunity to dive in and read along with us when you have the chance. I would just say this, if you read and listen, you're going to get more out of it. Nine times out of ten, when people read, especially if it's a language that it may be English, but the vernacular, the way of speaking is a little bit more arduous, difficult. They use grammar and speak grammatically differently. So not just the words are a little different, but the way they structure their speech. So anyway, what we're doing is focusing on constitutional compliance. Folks, until we the people demand our government. So let's be clear. Our government are those people we elect. They may be going into office and they may be told, I got to follow this statute. We got to follow this. This is what we got to do. No. As a matter of fact, the first thing that they're required to do before they do anything is they're to take that oath to support the very specific constitution that was ratified, not this new age constitution where they're making it up as they go along. Therefore, we have to demand that they actually support the constitution. Most of these idiots, most of these folks, now there are good people in office. There are lots of idiots in office, more than good. And there are very nefarious people, and there are probably more nefarious people than good as well. So as we look at all the people in office, most people don't even fathom how many that is. I mean, if you look at the state legislatures, I believe at the state legislatures were probably somewhere around 12, 15,000. When we look at the counties, I think my estimate is it's over 20. And so we're probably somewhere close to having, 40, 50,000 people that are in office that are actually elected, not representatives, that type of office, not, judges and these pompous, pretentious, lawyers who are, they get off on changing, perverting and subverting the Constitution just so they can make their own law. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. So anyway, as we go through the content, we're hoping that you can understand the importance of holding public servants accountable to that oath and making sure that they're only spending money on those things enumerated. When they recognize laws have been created that are not within the enumerated objects in the Constitution delegated to them, then they should be getting rid of them. They should be expunging all laws because they had no authority to create it in the first place. It doesn't matter if it was a different session years and years ago. It doesn't matter. If they find out, it's just like an auditor. So speaking of auditors, I'm actually going to get out in front of this because, I've helped an auditor before in a race. But because even though the auditor signed the pledge, I never got it back to me. And that, folks, if you're milquetoast, if you're not going to be a hard champion, if you're not going to prove to me that you want everybody must be held accountable to that oath of office, then don't think I'm going to support you. You must do that. I mean, I helped an auditor run a campaign and never got I got no pleasure out of the positions and what that person did, other than a few times they actually played a strong front on the Constitution. A strong front, not a total front. And as a matter of fact, anybody that wants to actually play compromise with things that are not delegated, I'm sorry, folks. If you're a politician, if you're doing things and you want to just compromise, then you are the problem. You're the snake in the grass that is literally undermining our Constitution. If you're not standing up on full compliance, as a matter of fact, same politician decided instead of supporting the entire Constitution, they want to go down a myopic path and just say, this is important. We need to get counties being recognized in the suffrage in their state Senate. Instead of getting all of the constitutional compliance, they want to focus. I mean, what's different between that and the abortion, gun rights, and all of these other myopic issues? It's getting it's literally creating a new faction so that people can say, yeah, that's important. Well, full compliance is the most important. Full compliance, that's what we're focused on. And so we actually have an auditor that's running a race this year for state auditor. And actually, I think the election is next year. Since it's a statewide campaign, he's starting, 18 months out or so before the primary. So anyway, I'm working with him, and we'll probably introduce you to him. And he's a true Republican in heart. He's going to probably run independent because the Republican Party, where the state that he's running for, is a part of the problem. They do everything they can to undermine people. So what he has to do is he has to run a Republican campaign as the independent and prove to the Republicans he's far more Republican than any Republican on the ticket. And actually, by doing so, I believe that he's going to help expose the party leadership so that everybody will recognize after the election in 2026, they need to restructure their party to start leaning on the Constitution full bore. In other words, not halfway, not lip service, not keeping it, keeping it dust free, full bore, full compliance, using the Constitution as both your weapon and the defense. So anyway, we're looking forward to introducing him to you. But again, this whole campaign must be on full compliance. This is why we need to start challenging the paradigm on the president. Now, I'm still going through content, and I'm going to dive into that after I say this little part here. When we look at what the heck's going on, I am going to just rant and rant for probably a couple of days towards the end of this month, just due to the fact that I can't believe I listen to all these conservative entertainers, those two yucks that are filling in for Rush Limbaugh, supposedly, I guess their equivalent, I think it's Buck and Clay or something like that. And I listen to these guys and I go, oh my, these guys are just as bad as progressives because they are not placing clear context on the what the heck's going on, what the heck's President Trump is doing, and these terrible things that are being done under his hand. So we'll dive into that, and we'll rant because, you know what? When we start talking about a person that is under oath, as Madison stated, they are obligated. That's a capital O, obligated to basically oppose every infraction regarding the Constitution. If it's an infraction, they need to oppose it. You don't get to choose. That goes back to this milquetoast, perennial candidate, running here, but, just wanting to be, hey, vote for me. I'm a good politician because we can think and come into consensus for good ideas and good solutions. Who cares about the Constitution? Those people are our enemy. We have to actually function as government, and we have to behave. Bottom line, as hard as it is, when we actually look at what a parent should be doing, a parent should be parenting all the way. But a parent should actually, if the parent is a man of God, a woman of God, then they're going to stand on the right position and basically, I'll just say, counsel their son or daughter. And so as they grow up, you know, it's time for, you know, letting them make their own choices, their own decisions, and standing there and saying, this is what you need to do. You shouldn't be doing that. This is what you need to do. You need to do this. You need to be in compliance. You need, and holding that line. It's the same thing. It is the same thing regarding these public servants. We have to hold them accountable. They're all going to, they may all make mistakes, and they're humans. I get that. But bottom line, we cannot allow them just this full access to being able to wage tyranny upon us. So with that, let me dive into where we are. So as we look at this document that I've been going through, because what I'm doing is refuting this compiled document of documents. It's a PDF, and it's up on the website. And I've talked, this is what we've been talking about before. The document starts off with a First Amendment petition, or basically it is a petition of Continental Congress to the King. We covered this already. And then we also covered the Articles of Association and made a comparison to the Articles of Association and this first petition, because both of them were done in the same period of time. The next document that they actually produce is the Declaration of Independence. And so we cover this regularly, but there's nothing really jumping out here regarding the Declaration of Independence. It's not like, you know, they're connecting any dots to say, aha, this person, you know, did this, and this is where, you know, they signed a deal with the devil. Nothing like that. Articles of Confederation. So they then dive into the Articles of Confederation, and basically it completely missed. They did not include the Articles of Association. They completely missed it, and they decided, well, we'll give you the Articles of Confederation. And we cover this as well. And whether this is full and comprehensive, which I doubt, that's what they gave you. And then they give you the Treaty of Paris, which we've already gone through. We've covered these documents already this year. And so they highlight these very specific things. They highlight, you know, and I'm looking at the highlights and I go, so what's the point? You're highlighting John Adams' name. Anyway, so as we go through this and we've covered that, then they go through the Constitution. We cover the Constitution every year, and we will cover the Constitution. But there's nothing in here that they're alluding to say, ah, this is why the Constitution, you know, was is not our governing document. The fact is, we're going through the ratification debates. Every state actually went through this. Every state went through this that joined the Union. The only state that didn't go through this, and I guess there's a radio show host that's just picking on Rogue Island, whether they ratified it to come into the Union or whether that was required, and however Rhode Island decided, the bottom line is, once Congress was formed, right? So prior to the establishment of the federal government couldn't be established without 9 states. Once New Hampshire ratified, the federal government was going to form. These 9 states were committed and going to submit themselves into the Union to support this general government to serve them. So once the new general government had been created and Congress had formed, then we actually see these states out there that had joined the Union. There were 2 that were out, right? North Carolina and Rhode Island. And so Rhode Island joined in 1790 after North Carolina. The question is, did they actually go through the ratification process and vote for it? Or did they basically submit to become, you know, to basically request to be admitted? I really don't care. The Constitution was in force, and now there was a process in the Constitution in admitting Rhode Island into the Union. Whether they wanted to spend the time and money or whether they just said, hey, we want to become members of the Union. Doesn't really matter. There's no there there. There's no big deal about how Rhode Island came into the Union. They came in with equal footing. That's the whole point, that all states would be adjoined to the Union with full equal footing. Now, did something happen that actually subjugated Rhode Island where they lost half their property? Or however they were brought in, because every state is a sovereign, independent state. It's not a democracy where the people rule themselves. It is a republic. So Rhode Island actually has sovereigns, and as sovereigns, they make the decisions because they've been elected to do so. And so I just find it interesting how many people get entertained with this full course meal of conspiracy theories and so forth, and say, ah, see, this is a big deal. We got to look at Rhode Island. Rhode Island was a pimple on the butt of a gnat. They were constantly an irritant. They were an adjutant. They annoyed the crap out of the rest of the states. That's one of the reasons why they acquired the name Rogue Island, but they were still a part of the Union, and they joined the Union. And so, right, wrong, or indifferent, they, became a part of the Union in 1790. So to be clear, when we look at, these circumstances, don't let yourself be bamboozled by, these nuances, because Congress at this point in time had the authority. Now, Rhode Island could have actually rejected the Constitution. They could have just rejected it. They hadn't ratified it. They didn't go through the process of ratifying it. Had they rejected it and never joined the Union, then that would be a different story altogether. But because the Constitution had formed and the federal government had formed, Congress was now functioning in 1790. They were in their second year of the first session. They had the ability to admit new states into the Union. There was no caveat in the Constitution that says, oh, if a state comes along and they were one of the original colonies, they just can't do-si-do in by an admission via Congress. That doesn't exist either. So what's the big deal? I don't get it. Bottom line, let me keep moving forward here, because all of these documents that these guys bring up, these conspiracies and everything else, all they're doing is they're pointing out that they assumed or did something that wasn't according to the plan. The question is, did the government have the authority to admit states into the Union under the Constitution? Regardless of whether they were corporations, regardless, blah, 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 it doesn't matter. Does the Constitution grant Congress the power to admit states into the Union? Yes, it does. Does it grant them the power to make conditions of how they have to join? No. So the conditions of how they joined, even though they may not have been equal footings, the conditions of how they joined doesn't really mean anything other than the fact that if the states complied, they were complying to coercion. They were coerced, and they just said, okay, well, we're going to comply. Doesn't mean that what they did and the conditions that they had set and allowed to be set were legitimate. It's kind of like as people start, convincing you and you start surrendering, I'm going to go into your court and I'm going to play this game because, your guns are bigger than me and mine and you have more people to force me and I'm just going along with it. It doesn't make what's going on legitimate. Stop thinking that everything is being done legitimately. understanding what they have the authority to do and then looking at how it was done helps you understand that at the state level, all of these reservations, all of these caveats, stipulations going into, you know, the joining the union, you know, through the enabling acts, these types of things. The point is that those conditions, stipulations were unconstitutional. They many states today don't have land because the federal government still claims they possess it because that was a stipulation in joining the union. They didn't have the authority to do that. State, take your land back. You can take your land back. All you have to do is say, well, show me in the Constitution you have the authority to do this. And as a matter of fact, you can try to go down the path of playing civil law. And when you play civil law, you're going to draw swords and you're going to get cut. And when you get cut, you're going to end up, you know, either getting your arm cut off, your head cut off, or maybe you will prevail. It doesn't matter. Why step into a duel? Why step into a match, a fencing match, a sword match, a duel in a court that has no jurisdiction? Why? Quit playing their game. Bottom line, when you actually stand up and you actually and definitively say they have no authority, they have no jurisdiction, it has to be within the Constitution. We've never amended the Constitution to let them do these things. This is why when we go through these five critical documents, folks, which are the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions of 98, then the Kentucky resolutions of 99, and then Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions, and then we go through Madison's notes on nullification. This is where you can actually see the states absolutely, at any point in time, have the ability to stand up and ultra interposition, basically standing up and saying, I'm sorry, you have no authority to do these things. Bring your army and kill us. If you do so, we'll just leave the Union. Because bottom line, when you're standing on the truth, the problem was during the Civil War, Lincoln was a denier. The Southern states had the ability to leave the Union. Lincoln was a clear denier. And instead of letting them join the Confederation and then waging war against, you know, this government because of slavery, that would have been completely different. That would have been the right thing for Lincoln to do, using the Monroe Doctrine. There were all sorts of ways Lincoln could have been right, and it's easy for me to say this because I'm, you know, armchair quarterbacking here, right? I mean, who knows better than the person that has, you know, all the analysis and can look and go, well, shoot, this would have been the best way to go. And there are best ways to go almost all the time, you know, and that's what Monday armchair quarterbacks do. Anybody can come up with that. But what's even worse is the people that don't come up with what should have happened. All they do is say, oh, well, that's wrong. There's a lot of people out there. You've got these mainstream, you know, I look at the conservative movement kind of like the pharmaceutical movement in the medical field and everything else, because they're basically mainstream medicine. They're mainstream government. And they want to play in this concocted menagerie of, you know, unconstitutional government. And they want to, oh, well, this is what we're going to do. And we're focused on, you know, arresting people and charging them. You know, I'm going to dive into this on the Trump campaign. But bottom line, and I'm going to go into break real quick. Bottom line, we're going through the Hidalgo-Guadalupe Treaty. We'll clarify it when we come back. We're halfway through that. This is one of the last few documents we have to cover out of this document. I've been kind of barraging and saying, hey, what the heck is all this waste of paper? Most of the stuff that they're presenting, there is nothing there. Nothing other than good history and information. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I apologize for the little ranting instead of diving into what we need to be diving into. And I guess I'm hoping you understand how frustrating it is when everybody is listening to the noise. You have to shut out the noise. Just because there are people flapping their gums on a conservative talk show does not mean that what they're saying is true. If you're going to spend time and you want to waste the valuable time we have in engaging with our public servants and holding them accountable to the Constitution, if you want to waste your time and follow and listen to Charlie Kirk, you know, the Bucks and the Hannitys and these other people struggling for the limelight so that they can make money, then you're just wasting my time. Because bottom line, nobody is telling you the real facts that the federal government assumed powers that they didn't have. The rest of this crap doesn't matter. And as a matter of fact, there are so many people that are so hell-bent on, oh, well, we got to get our gold back. You know what? You'll never get your gold back. We're never going to preserve our liberties until we start holding public servants accountable to their oath. Can I say that with more emphasis? If you want to be a part of the solution, quit wasting your time hearing what somebody has to say about Rhode Island. If you want to save the Constitution, quit listening to the conspiracy gum flappers. I don't care how much truth they're speaking, what they're telling you is nothing to do with what we have to do. It is irrefutable. We must interpose. The truth will come out, but we have to seize government with interposition. We have to stop them and arrest the evil that they're doing and force them and or remove them so that we can start restoring our government in functioning within the parameters of the delegated objects of the constitutions that are applicable. That's that simple. It's not that hard. That's why the focus is constitutional compliance. Not, oh, did you hear this new thing? So-and-so dated a woman of questionable character. I get harangued. I get pinged. I get sidelined all the time because we want to entertain people because, well, they got a good idea. Well, let's just do this. I think we need to be doing a lot of things. And I think that we need to actually be doing everything that has to be done. The focus really needs to be on petitions. The focus really needs to be on holding people accountable, driving petitions. You want to do an email campaign? Great. Then include a petition in your email campaign. Let's start actually slinging rounds that can actually take people out. In warfare, you can't just go in there with feathers and sponges and try to pummel somebody into submission. It just will not work. You have to use the effective weapons, those that bring the mortality to bear of the politician. Petitions are those things. Anyway, I'm just a little frustrated, and it just, and to be honest with you folks, these past month and a half, I have been somewhat sidelined just due to the fact that I've been focused on other things, such as, you know, important things. Not that they weren't, I couldn't do this, but I still maintained, you know, the content still moving forward. You need to understand that this, you know, as humans, we can get derailed real quick. It just takes a good flu to knock somebody down or some type of ailment or what have you. And so I at least maintained what was important, driving content. There's nothing that's probably more important right now than laying out the content so that you can actually see exactly what our forefathers did in the Tory Acts with the petitions and organizing, creating representation, holding representation accountable. I mean, what has to be done is irrefutable. So why is it that we're allowing these organizations like the Gun Owners Association or, you know, any of these organizations to captivate us? Oh, they passed a bill. You know what? That one bill that they passed, and, you know, to basically empower police to have concealed guns just recently, that's only one of many things that they're passing that are absolutely wrong. Full compliance. Don't worry about the one issue. Oh, well, at least we stopped that. Well, parents don't have any rights anymore, but at least we got our guns. Anyway, I don't know if I'm going to be on another show talking about the militia. That may be happening. But what needs to happen is this Guadalupe Hidalgo and the treaty that was made. So we're going into Article 5. The boundary line, this is Article 5, the boundary line, the two republics shall commence in the Gulf of Mexico, 3 leagues from the land opposite of the mouth of the Rio Grande, otherwise called the Rio Bravo del Norte, or opposite the mouth of the deepest branch, if it should have more than one branch emptying directly into the sea. From thence, the middle of that river, following the deepest channel, where it has more than one, to the point where it strikes the southern boundary of New Mexico, thence westwardly along the whole southern border of New Mexico, which runs north of the town called Pasco. So, Peso. So, Peso was apparently in Mexico. It is western termination, thence northward along the western line of New Mexico. So obviously they're painting this all the way out to the Pacific Ocean. Suffice it to say, they just gave you the boundaries from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific Ocean. This is missing one small strip of land that we possess today. So we didn't steal anything from Mexico. The southern and western limits of New Mexico mentioned in the article are those laid down, because remember, we were under attack and we ended up basically having to defend ourselves, to take our property back. And you know what? What we didn't do is we didn't take northern Mexico from them. Like what most armies and what most societies do. Well, you think you could take it from us? And now we're taking yours from you. Anyway, the southern limit of New Mexico mentioned in the article are those laid down in the map entitled Map of the United States, as organized and defined by the various acts of Congress of said republic and constructed according to the best authority. So, in other words, they're laying out this map of the current United States from the Pacific to the Atlantic. And so, suffice it to say that Article 5 literally covers the entire boundary of who gets what. Article 6. The vessels of the United States shall in all times have a free and uninterrupted passage by the Gulf of California and by the River Colorado below its confluence with the Gila to and from their possessions situated north of the boundary line defined in the preceding article, it being understood that this passage is to be by navigation the Gulf of California and the Colorado River, and not by land without the express consent of the Mexico government. If the examinations which may be made, it should be ascertained to be practicable and advantageous to construct a road canal or railway which should in whole part or in part run upon the Gila or upon its right or its left bank, within the same of one marine league from either margin of the river, the governments of both republics will form an agreement regarding its construction in order that it may serve equally for the use and advantage of both countries. Article 7. The River Gila and the part of the Rio Bravo del Norte lying below the southern boundary of New Mexico being agreeable to the fifth article divided in the middle between the two republics, the navigation of the Gila and the Bravo shall said boundaries shall be free and common to the vessels and citizens of both countries, and neither shall without the consent of the other construct any work that may impede or interrupt in whole or in part the exercise of this right, not even the purpose of favoring new methods of navigation, nor shall any tax or contribution under any denomination or title be levied upon vessels or persons navigating upon the same or upon merchandise or effects transported thereon, except in the case of landing upon one of their shores, if the purpose of making the said rivers navigable or for the maintaining them in such state, it should be necessary or advantageous to establish any tax or contribution, this shall not be done without the consent of both governments. The stipulations contained in the present articles shall not impair the territorial rights or either republic within its establishment. So basically, they're going to be able to have free navigational access through these rivers. And if you land on the other guy's side, then they can tax you and so forth. But bottom line, this is just how they're going to behave. Mexico, or actually Article 8, Mexicans now established in territories previously belonging to Mexico and which remain for the future within the limits of the United States as defined by the present day shall be free to continue where they now reside or to remove at any time to the Mexican Republic, retaining the property with which they possess in the said territories or disposing thereof and removing the proceedings wherever they please without their being subjected on this account to any contribution, tax, or charge whatever. Those who shall prefer to remain in the said territories may either retain the title and rights of Mexican citizens or acquire those of citizens of the United States, but they shall be under the obligation to make their election within 1 year from the date of the exchange of ratifications of this treaty, and those who shall remain in the said territories after the expiration of that year without having declared their intention to retain the character of Mexicans shall be considered to have elected to become citizens of the United States. In the said territories, property of every kind now belonging to Mexicans not established there shall be inviolably respected. The present owners, the heirs of these, and all Mexicans who may hereafter acquire said property by contract shall enjoy with respect to guarantees equally ample as if the same belonged to citizens of the United States. Article 9. The Mexicans who in this territory aforesaid shall not preserve the character of citizens of the Mexican Republic, comfortably what is stipulated in the preceding article shall be incorporated into the Union of the United States and be admitted at the proper time to be judged by Congress of the United States. So it's interesting. They at least acknowledge that Congress had to admit states into the Union, not the court, not the president, Congress. To the enjoyment of all the rights of the United States citizens, according to the principles of the Constitution, and in the meantime shall be maintained and protected in the free enjoyment of the liberty property secured in the free exercise of their religion without restriction. Now, here's a treaty that they're claiming that as these territories come into the United States, that they will be done so by Congress. But there's nothing in here, the caveats, very specific things, other than the fact that Congress will make them join them to the Union through an enabling act and so forth. Keep in mind, folks, Congress has no authority to make any obligations or make any claims to a state's property once it becomes a state, other than those things that are enumerated within the Constitution, such as forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and needful buildings. Therefore, when we're looking at these states joining the Union and Congress came along and said, you can't have this land, you can't do that, and, you know, we're going to hold all this stuff back. Well, the state joined the Union properly, and the reservations or stipulations that Congress put on there was all fraudulent. And if the state abided by that, that doesn't mean it's legitimate. The authority wasn't there. Therefore, the states at any point in time can take all their land back, all their land back. And actually, the people of those states can take their land back. Okay, so going on in Article 11, considering that a great picture of the territories, which by the present treaty are to be comprehended for the future within the limits of the United States, is now occupied by savage tribes who will hereafter be under the exclusive control of the government of the United States. Okay, so do you hear this? This is in Article 11, folks, where the treaty basically makes this jurisdictional claim over the savage tribes, over the Indians in these areas. Now, this treaty, I believe, was February 1748. Okay, so what that means is now they've made claim to the jurisdiction, claiming jurisdiction over all Indian tribes because they're residing in United States territories. In other words, Mexico has no jurisdiction over them. The United States does. Go read the 14th Amendment now, folks, and understand that Section 1, when it basically states, you know, the citizenship standard of what a citizen is, then it's this clear. All persons born or naturalized in the United States, so if you're born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, right, are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. Therefore, every Indian in the United States, because even though they may have been on a reservation, they may have been in a treaty, they're under the jurisdiction of the United States. There's no caveat here. Section 1 of the 14th Amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the United States. So if you're born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States where they reside right now. The 14th Amendment made them citizens. So the federal government has been basically taking property from the states. They've been basically keeping the Native Americans, the Indians in America, from becoming citizens, even though the law demanded it. There was no stipulation whatsoever. They made sure that all persons born here, you could have been Mexican, didn't matter. If you're under the jurisdiction, you now became a U.S. citizen, period. Now, there may have been latitude of dual citizenship, of course. There may have been, but this doesn't say that. It basically states that all these people that have been born in the United States while under jurisdiction thereof, they are citizens. So getting back to this point here, and whose incursions with the territory of Mexico would be prejudicial in the extreme, it is solemnly agreed that all such incursions shall be forcibly restrained by the government of the United States whensoever this may be necessary, and that when they cannot be prevented, they shall be punished by the said government, and the satisfaction for the same shall be exacted on the same way and equal diligence and energy as if the same incursion were mediated or commented or committed within its own territory against its own citizens. It shall not be lawful under any pretext whatever for any inhabitant of the United States to purchase or acquire any Mexican or any foreign residing in Mexico or who may have been captured by Indians inhabiting the territory of either of the two republics, nor to purchase, acquire horses, mules, cattle, of property of any kind stolen within the Mexican territory by such Indians. And in the event of any person or persons captured within the Mexican territory by Indians being carried into the territory of the United States, the government of the latter engages and binds itself to the most solemn manner so soon as it shall know of such captives being within its territory and shall be so able so to do through the faithful exercise of its influence and power to rescue them and return them to their country or deliver them to the agent or representative of the Mexican government. The Mexican authorities will, as far as practical, give to the government of the United States notice of such captures, and its agents shall pay the expenses incurred in the maintenance and transmission of the rescued captives, who, in the meantime, shall be treated with the utmost hospitality by the American authorities at the place where they may be. But if the government of the United States, before receiving such notice from Mexico, should obtain intelligence through any other channel of the existence of Mexican captives within its territory, it shall proceed forth with to effect the release and deliver to the Mexican government as above stipulated. In other words, if you find out, you still have to do it. For the purpose of giving these stipulations the fullest possible efficacy, thereby affording the security and redress demanded by their true spirit and intent, the government of the United States will now and hereafter pass without unnecessary delay and always vigilant enforce such laws as the nature of the subject may require. And finally, the sacredness of this obligation shall never be lost sight of by the said government when providing for the removal of the Indians from any portion of the said territories or for its being settled by citizens of the United States. But on the contrary, special care shall be taken not to place its Indian occupants under the necessity of seeking new homes by committing those invasions which the United States have solemnly obliged themselves to restrain. Okay, so in other words, they're basically making, you know, okay, we're going to return your guys. We're not going to, you know, go down and seize Indians. We're just going to, you know, make sure that if you get captured, we'll put you back. Anyway, Article 12. In consideration of the extension acquired by the boundaries of the United States as defined in the fifth article of the present treaty, the government of the United States engages to pay to that of Mexican Republic the sum of $15 million. Not only did we actually lay out, but we agreed and they agreed that we would pay them. Now, La Raza and a lot of, I'll just say, haters and people that are out there saying we did wrong. Both nations were at the table and they agreed to these terms. Immediately after the treaty shall have been duly ratified, the government of the Mexican Republic, the sum of $3 million shall be paid to the said government of the United States at the city of Mexico in the gold or silver coin of Mexico. The remaining $12 million shall be paid at the same place and in the same coin in annual installments of $3 million each, together with the interest on the same at the rate of 6% per annum. This interest shall begin to run upon the whole sum of the $12 million from the day of the ratification of the present treaty by the Mexican government, and at the first of the installments shall be paid at the expiration of 1 year of the same day, together with each annual installment as it falls due. The whole interest accruing on such installment from the beginning shall also be paid. Article 13. The United States shall engage, moreover, to assume and pay the claimants all the amounts now due them, and that hereafter to become due by reason of the claims already liquidated and decided against the Mexican Republic under the conventions between the two republics severally concluded on the 11th day of April, 1839, and on the 30th day of January, 1843, so that the Mexican Republic shall be absolutely exempt for the future from all expense whatever on the account of the said claims. So apparently there were some claims that were being going all the way back to the 39 and the 43rd years of 1800. Anyway, nothing there, folks. 14. The United States does furthermore discharge the Mexican Republic from all claims of citizens of the United States not heretofore decided against the Mexican government, which may have arisen previously to the date of the signature of this treaty, which discharge shall be final and perpetual, whether the said claim shall be rejected or be allowed by the Board of Commissioners, provided for the following article, and whatever shall be the total amount of those allowed. And so we're going to be running out of time. I've got less than a minute. So at this point, we're going into Article 15. And so we've got out of this entire treaty, we've got 8 of 12 done. So there are 4 more pages that we'll take care of on Monday. And so, folks, just let me reemphasize. If you want to allow yourself to waste time and get caught up in the conspiracies, get caught up in, you know, in all of these things that we're going to do that are going to be unconstitutional, and you're okay with accepting, you know, this noncompliance of the Constitution, then there's really no point. Either you are part of the solution or you're part of the problem. Quit being a part of the problem. It is all about holding people accountable with petitions. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.